Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you?
Quite frankly, not good. Not happy. But here's the thing.
You've got to do a podcast.
Right.
That's the thing.
And it's not a Tottenham podcast. And we just had Dan Dormer on from London is Blue podcast the other day, and I saw him tweeting about it. So maybe we have new Chelsea listeners tonight. And I don't I don't want this to just be a weep fest for myself and Tottenham fans, because I know the other side of that. Like, you know, I'm one of those people who, like, when the Eagles beat the Bears in the playoffs and Bears fans were just, like, ranting and raving and they were so angry about everything and this and that, like, their tears sustained me. So I don't want to feed the people my tears. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want them to just be like, yeah, come on, cry. I want you to cry. Like, I'm not going to give it to them.
Try for me, like Stewie says.
I won't let them. I'm not going to let them have the satisfaction.
Here's the thing, though. I'm okay with you. I don't want to sound bad, because you indulged me after Kiev, and I went to Kiev for the Champions League final last year. So you indulged me.
I've always been nothing but kind to you in moments of weakness.
I will be kind, but there will be a moment where I'm like,
no, speak openly. I'm going to be harsh to Tottenham. Usually I give them typically a soft landing spot. I'm usually the guy who, like, oh, Daniel Levy, no signings, here's why that's okay. Oh, the stadium's not ready yet, here's why you shouldn't care. I actually feel angrier about their situation right now than I usually do.
Okay. Well, I would just say this, that there are other good things on the podcast. Like, we've got your mail, excellent mail. Oh, traveling mail, even. Someone went up a volcano. It was a Spurs fan. She didn't hurl herself into the volcano. She may have regretted that decision. And we have red cards and man of the match.
Yeah.
I'm
going to give you, and people may shut this off immediately when I say this, but I have an all MLS red card man of the match. So that's something to look forward to.
You're killing the end of the pod.
Why can't you show even the slightest respect for our domestic league? All you ever do is tell people to go out to their local clubs.
Yeah, right.
But when
Most of those aren't in MLS.
When we're talking about our local clubs here in the United States, all you do is make fun of it.
No, I mean when you go to your local club, I mean in the United States. I recognize that.
Right.
I'm not saying anything. It's just like when I turn on the radio in New York, it's Yankees hot stove. I'm like, I don't want to hear about, I'm a Mets fan. I don't want to hear about the Mets in the off season.
Well,
barely want to hear about them in April.
Well, you're going to hear some MLS, whether you like it or not.
Okay.
In fact, everyone just fast forward to that now. Let's see. JJ, look, I'm going to at least mention that Manchester City did score a goal to beat Burton Albion by an aggregate of 10-0.
That was one lopsided half of the draw.
If you're Burton, like, now I know that it's great for them to have gotten this far because there's money and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
But, like, I remember I asked you after Brazil got hammered by Germany in the World Cup, and we threw out the question, would Brazil have just been better off losing normally to Colombia in the round before rather than having that happen round
but
later?
It's not the same
If you're
thing.
Burton, should they have just gone out in the quarterfinals like 2-1 rather than have to suffer through a 10-0?
No, but if I'm Middlesbrough, who they knocked out, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, we definitely. You got to think that a Tony Pulis side would have given a better game to Manchester City.
Yeah, you think?
You've got to think that.
They lost 9-0 in the first leg, JJ. Yeah, probably they would have had.
What happens if Burton scored that goal, that chance they missed in the first leg?
What are you even pretending to imply right now?
Tense times at the Etihad.
That's embarrassing. Like, I'm actually embarrassed for you that you're trying to suggest.
Oh, well, enjoy it, because I'm about to get a bucket load of your embarrassment. No.
And then there was Stamford Bridge. Congratulations to Chelsea. What?
You mean that, don't you?
They win. God, where is the away goals rule when you need it?
Oh, I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
Even Poch mentioned it in his post-match. He said, in any competition in Europe, we would have been through to the final.
I guarantee you there were Spurs fans out there who were watching who were, like, counting down the seconds at the end didn't realize.
A couple of people online. I was delighted, though. I didn't want to do extra time. I just wanted the penalties, the drama of it, when you're not involved.
Hindsight is 2020. I would now disagree with that sentiment. Here's what I will say about Tottenham. And I'm sure there are Spurs fans out there who can please correct me on Twitter if I'm wrong when I say this, but I think I had read at some point earlier this decade when Tottenham lost to Chelsea in the League Cup final in 2015, I think it was. I think I was reading then that if this decade should end without Tottenham capturing a trophy, it would be their first decade this century, I believe, without a single trophy. And now here we are. We are now rapidly approaching the end of this decade. Tottenham basically have, I'm not including them in the title race, so they basically have the Champions League and the FA Cup to get through this without that coming to fruition. And I can't tell you that I have a great feeling about that.
It's such
right
a
now.
Disingenuous way to paint the last half century since Bill Nicholson for Spurs, because you're talking here, it's amazing to me, just the last 5 years of Pochettino. Since 2014, it's amazing the kind of sea change in mentality that even an old school fan like me would have. Because Barry Glendening on Twitter was
what did he say?
He just said, "Lads, it's Spurs," which is the refrain now that has emanated from the Manchester United dressing room, because that's the way they treated them. I had to check myself when I came in this evening to see how upset you were over Spurs. Like, Spurs are at the business end of things now, and you're getting disappointed now that you're not winning something at the business end. For years, it was never the case. They were an afterthought. Mm-hmm. They were the other team in London outside of Chelsea and Arsenal.
It's what makes this period so conflicting, because here they are on the doorstep of ending this decade without a trophy, and yet here they are in arguably, I'll say the 60s are the greatest period in the history of Spurs.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about, okay, what comes after that, this right now, we're living in what might very well be the greatest second greatest era of Tottenham history.
How about this? The Tottenham's greatest ever striker, probably Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
Tottenham's second greatest striker, it's
probably
Harry Kane right now. Probably.
Yeah. Look at this. And here's the problem, is for years I have fought the notion that, the lads at Spurs. I've battled that. I've defended them as a club. When we would get messages after they would lose something, always they'd come flooding in, especially I remember after they lost to West Ham two seasons ago to pretty much rule themselves out of the title race against Chelsea. They bottled it. I fought that. This is the first time really that I've come on this podcast and have said that the trying to defend the position of Tottenham not being a bottling club is becoming untenable.
Look,
and let me just read this to you real quick.
Okay.
This is what they've done in tournaments this decade. 2010 FA Cup, lost to Portsmouth in the semifinals in extra time. 2012 FA Cup, lost to Chelsea in the semifinals. 2015 League Cup, lost to Chelsea in the final. 2017 FA Cup, lost to Chelsea in the semifinals. 2018 FA Cup, lost to Manchester United in the semifinals. 2019 League Cup, lost to Chelsea in the semifinals on penalties. And that's not mentioning the years where they battled Leicester City in the title race, and the year after that when they battled Chelsea in a title race and came up short both times. That is a laundry list of moments throughout this decade where Spurs have come up short when they've gone deep, whether it be into a tournament or into a season. And I think at a certain point, you can only see so many things like that in front of you without them having won anything during that time. And I'm not Arsene Wenger telling you that fourth place is a trophy. It's hard to look at all that and start to not see what it is that the rest of the Premier League sees with Spurs.
I hear what you're saying, but I just want to move it to the context of the two legs of this semi-final. And I know when you put all that together, that's how you feel. But honestly, over these two legs, and particularly even in the second half at Wembley, Chelsea were the better team.
I would agree.
And deserved to get through this one. But you're looking at the era as a whole. And I know that's the way you feel about it.
Well, because these moments also just start to build as a fan, moment after moment, as they build on top of one another, and it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's more than that, though, because you're looking at the season. Take, for example, last season. Spurs were probably most people's favourites to beat United in that semi-final.
Yes.
you feel as if there's so much progress behind you, the club is moving in the right direction, and therefore, well, now's our time to beat them. We are amongst the big guys and the big guns, and we will beat them. And when it doesn't happen, it makes you question all that progress. I had an argument with a guy on Twitter who for some, last week, it wasn't an argument, more of a debate, because that's what they are on Twitter, debates.
Yeah, okay, let's call it that.
And he kept kind of chipping away at Pochettino and not looking at the whole context of the last 30 years of Tottenham Hotspur. You know, the endless carousel of managers, the bad buys, the relegation battles in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, you look at the Poch era, and I don't care about the League Cup, and I don't care about the League Cup win under, was it Martin Jarl or whoever it was? I don't care.
No, it was Wande Ramos.
Wande Ramos. Magic Wande.
Yeah.
And I don't care about that one season in the Champions League under Harry Redknapp, because that wasn't real. Look at what Pochettino's done. And my argument was, the club are not recognisable from what they were. They are constantly in the conversation. But for you as a supporter, to not have gone that final step and be hoisting a trophy at this point now, it's tough, especially a League Cup, which is one you can identify, we can do this, we can have it won by February. It feels really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I am totally with you.
And we'll bring it back now to you. I mean, you want to talk about the context of these two legs.
I just want to, because it's kind of unfair to, I would have, last year's semi-final against United would have felt much more galling to me than this one. Because I felt Spurs actually...
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's fair. And I think I actually probably was more down after that one.
Like, I spoke to Spurs fans before this second leg, and they're like, we're missing three absolute key players that we can't really face Chelsea on even terms without.
I still think, if I'm trying to think in my head now of, like, the emptiest I felt after a Tottenham loss, it might... I don't know if I stand alone on this. The way they crashed out against Juventus in the Champions League, really, that's just like, I remember I texted you and I was just like, I'm done. Like,
well, I honestly think they were, over the two legs, the better team.
Yeah,
I thought it was a great away performance, and the home performance for almost three quarters of the game was great. And then it was a couple of guys get pulled out of position.
And it was it in the blink of an eye. It was just like, oh my God. And then the ball
levels.
Cleared off the line. Like at the it was just,
that's the highest levels.
I know. First, I want to give you, I do promise we'll get to the Chelsea side of this because they were a part of this as well. But just looking at the Tottenham side, I can't help, you know, we always talk about it, there are reasons and there are excuses. Look, I have to say that injuries matter. That's like, injuries are a reason that things can go wrong, not an excuse.
Yeah.
Now, to an extent, and here's, like, there are moments when I'll say, no, that injury, like, you should be able to get past that. That's an excuse. But here's why I'm going to say that this is a little bit more of a reason when looking at it for Tottenham. I don't know how you account for this, JJ. I saw this stat from Spurs Statman on Twitter, and he says this. Prior to this season, Tottenham had averaged 15.5 injuries per season since the start of the 2012-13 campaign. It's it's January 24th right now. They have already reached 37 injuries in the 18-19 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
What club, I don't care who you are, and we talked about it a little bit on the last pod, I don't care who you are, how do you account for that?
Look at the injured players. A lot of them are coming off a World Cup, but they haven't had the same kind of rest that they've had coming into this season. And we talked about World Cup fatigue early on, and Tottenham looked a tired team early on, and then they hit their stride. That is a part of it. It certainly is. And also, as a team gets older, progresses, gets more time on the clock, those things start to happen. As players reach their mid-20s, they can break down a little bit more. Now, take, for example, Harry Kane. He never got a chance to rest the first ankle injury.
I know.
Never mind the second. So there can be an imbalance in injury-wise with him. He may not have been 100%. He may have been overcompensating. Next thing you know, he has another injury. I'm not that shocked.
I mean, like the ball that Christian Eriksen played in, it's one of the best passes I think I've ever seen, honestly. And if that's Kane on the end of that, look, it's still not an easy opportunity. But I take my chances with Harry Kane. And the way Llorente just, like, he bumbles over it, and it's just such a feeble attempt. And if you're Christian Eriksen, like, those must be the moments, because he's kind of in a battle with Spurs right now over contract negotiations. And after that happened, like, I tried to put myself in his head, and I was like, is that happening if I make this move to Real Madrid? Is my striker in a semifinal against a rival falling over himself on a ball that I just played in as perfectly as that?
By the way,
that's Harry Kane.
That ball was worth watching the game for alone. That was absolutely just wonderful piece of dexterity and contortion to make that ball bend. It was like a volleyed pass. Yeah. And Llorente actually was too confident because he was just coming off the header, scoring the goal. And he went to bury it and he ended up doing nothing. Just bumbling through it.
Watching him and Giroud at times in this match, it was not like a textbook display of the striker position.
No, but if you asked Eden Hazard who he want to play as centre forward, he'd want Giroud.
And we'll talk about that in one sec. There's one last note that I did want to have on Spurs here. And there's probably no one in the world, for however low I'm feeling right now, or any Tottenham fan who's listening to this, who do you think out there in the world at this moment feels the lowest about this?
Oh, Eric Dier.
Okay, well, other than people who played, I mean. Other than the guys on the field.
I don't know.
Heung-min Son. Because if you look at him...
He's a sensitive boy, and he loves his club.
It's a moment like this. I mean, to me, it has to be particularly... Of all the guys who are missing from Tottenham's side, it's got to be particularly painful for him. He knows how badly this team needs him. It's a match of huge consequence. Players at his position are hurt. He's healthy. He's already missed time this season for an international tournament that Spurs didn't need to release him for, but did so to help him avoid military service. And now he's watching from afar once again, totally healthy, while his club go out of a tournament that they desperately wanted to win. I mean, Kane is out. Ali's out. Sissoko and Lucas Moura are trying to play through injuries, basically. And Sissoko gets hurt again. And Son is perfectly healthy. God, could they have used him. And he can't because he's off on his second international tournament. I mean, like, it must have killed him watching that from the Asian Cup.
Killed me to watch Dier. That's as bad a penalty as you will see. No, Lucas Moura was poor too, but that was...
It's funny how things change. Eric Dier was England hero for his penalty conversion against Colombia.
Even that penalty, I went back and looked at it, wasn't that convincing.
He was the hero on a penalty. And now for Tottenham, he basically kicked the field goal.
And wasn't he caught out of position on the quick free kick that led to the Chelsea
I'd have to go back
first
and
goal
that.
Or whatever? But I would say this. Credit to Poch for getting the team back into it. He went to three at the back, which for the second half. And he got Danny Rose in. And Danny Rose's deliveries were very, very good. And Spurs looked like they clawed themselves back into the tie. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's talk about Chelsea now.
Yeah, let's do that. It's funny because Mauricio Sarri afterwards, he was talking about Eden Hazard. And I think we kind of got a glimpse into who... Because when Sarri made those original comments about like this club not having fight and character and things like that and a will to win... You know, we all kind of wondered. You and I sat here and we're like, he can't be talking about N'Golo Kante. Is he talking about? He couldn't be talking about Jorginho, who's his guy,
or even David Luiz.
I think everyone kind of suspected, without Sarri actually coming out and saying it. I think we all suspected that he was talking about Eden Hazard, and I think Sarri essentially confirmed some of that in things that he said since. He said, "What was the comment here?" He said the potential is higher than the performances when talking about Hazard. He has to respect, first of all, himself. Eden at the moment is a wonderful player, but he's an individual player. He's a very instinctive player. He's very important for us, of course, because he's a great player. He always can win the match in 2 minutes, sometimes in 1 minute, but at the moment, he's not a leader. That's what Sarri said before this match about Eden Hazard.
Right.
And then Hazard comes out, plays a great game, and Sarri is saying, see, he's playing fun tonight. It's not about where he's playing on the field.
That's
what he said.
Bollocks, Maurizio.
I agree.
Absolute bollocks. And I'll tell you why. He played his preferred centre forward in Giroud down the middle. You didn't play him as a false nine. You didn't play him as a centre forward and try to do what he did with like players like Dries Mertens at Napoli. He played him to the left of Giroud, Andrew, in his preferred position where he could get on the ball, drop deep, dribble at players, take them on and create things. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. Sarri played him in his correct position. And by the way, this is the quote from Gabriel Mercati that I wanted to use on last Tuesday's pod, but I didn't get a chance to. And it's about how the whole debate around Sarri, Jorginho, Kante, and the balance of the team, and even Hazard you can throw into that, how that debate has been simplified and how it's really not that simple. And I don't think that Chelsea are out of the water now. They're out of the danger zone now after tonight's game against a weakened Spurs. I don't believe that for a second. But Sarri's got to see that when he plays that team, he has a better chance of success than with the other iterations of Chelsea we've seen. But this is what McCarty wrote. Put Kante in front of the back four and you have a guy in a playmaker role without the skills to do it. Put Jorginho in Kante's role and you're asking a guy to go and press high and run around who evidently doesn't have the athleticism to do it. The only way it works is if you change the game plan entirely and move away from Sarri's style of football. If you're going to do that though, you might as well appoint a different manager. And he goes on to talk about how Sarri's a systems guy. And ultimately, that is why Sarri will be removed. Sarri is going to stick to the way he's going to play, and guys like Kante and Hazard are going to have to find their way in. Now,
but don't you think the arrival of Gonzalo Higuain will make that a little bit easier for him?
I'm fascinated because I see Giroud there, and I see Gonzalo Higuain come into this, and I think Giroud missed a chance tonight, right? And that chance probably sealed it. That he will definitely... Well,
he's talking about his free header, right?
Yeah. I mean, he could have put the tie beyond it right before penalties. And you look at Higuain and he's going to come in now. 6 goals, I think, for AC Milan. Not settled in Italy. And he's joining his master tactician who brought so much out of him at Napoli.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, can they get it going again?
I know.
At Stamford Bridge. A lot hinges on it for Sarri, never mind Higuain.
I know. There is this feeling like, okay, the win tonight that puts them into the final, they're starting to maybe feel good about themselves. Now Higuain comes in. Like, is this like sleeping giant maybe starting to wake up?
Or is he done? Like,
well, who's the he? Sarri or Higuain?
No, Higuain.
Okay.
And if Higuain is done, then there's a good chance that Sarri's done.
Who do you think will be at Chelsea longer, Sarri or Hazard?
Sarri marginally, because I just think...
Well, like, it's a matter of like when this summer each of them leaves?
Maybe.
What date?
Maybe.
Sarri's not going to get fired after this season.
Just listen to me now. I think Abramovich's position not being solidified in London will mean he won't want to make a change. He will want to leave Sarri into next season. But I don't see Eden Hazard being at Chelsea next season. So Sarri will be there and Sarri will be gone by next November.
So like on a technicality almost.
Couple of months. The difference between Hazard will go in July, August and Sarri will be gone by the end of October.
I found it so awkward, like, the way, and I wish I had Sarri's exact quote in front of me, what he said after the match tonight about Hazard, but it was something to the effect of what I said before. See, he was playing fun. It's not about where he plays positionally. It's about his mentality. And part of that is true. I just feel like if there was a burglar in here right now who was holding us up and then someone just happened to like come in and swing the door open and knock the burglar out cold, like, is it okay for them to then claim victory over having saved our lives? Like, okay, I guess technically, yeah, maybe Sarri's words did inspire Hazard, but I don't think that's the case. I think
playing him in his right position and Hazard finding he had a lot of space tonight to do the things he likes to do. By the way, it wasn't vintage Eden Hazard. It wasn't the perfect Hazard performance. He was very good, but he wasn't, you know, it wasn't something like what we saw in the summer from Belgium where he just ran the show.
Yeah, I will say, with the exception of the few Olivier Giroud misses where it felt like he had good opportunities that he really made total messes of, I really felt like no one played poorly for Chelsea tonight. And I think that's a very good sign, obviously.
I would say on the Llorente goal, how David Luiz ends up with his back to the ball is weird.
Yeah, Llorente, his ability to have squeezed between two people and gotten his head down to the level where he did.
Yeah.
When I saw the replay, at first when I saw it, I thought maybe he kind of like hip-checked it in or something. I couldn't believe he got his head down on
that. It's amazing considering all the easy headers he had against Fulham that he completely flubbed.
I know, what a bum he is. It's amazing that he was able to find that within himself.
By the way, I was listening to a podcast the other day. And they were talking about Sarri's rant, or not his rant, his
press officer's
rant, exactly. And the podcast was naming. Remember the when Mourinho ship was sinking, Mourinho 2.0, and the Chelsea fans turned on three players and they took the flag out, the three rats at Stamford Bridge. Can you remember the three rats? The players they named that weren't doing it. Jose Mourinho had spoken about the people who were undermining him. Hazard, Costa, and Fabregas.
Interesting.
Yeah, and yet one rat remains.
And he's pretty important. He's very important.
He's a head honcho rat.
I guess that's about it. It'll be interesting now to see if Chelsea in this season of... I was going to say the season of low morale. It wasn't that way. Most of the season, I think people were speaking highly of them.
Right. But we were noticing things.
I felt like Maurizio Sarri almost forced us into looking at Chelsea through a negative lens. I think most people were saying, look, even with this manager who hasn't been there very long, they're still getting results. You know, they were, for a while, they were among the title race, and then they fell off, and then, you know, all of a sudden, like, Sarri, just his whole demeanor and everything just seemed to turn. So I don't know that I want to say that this has been like a dark season for them, and now they're in a cup final against Manchester City, and I think with Higuain available, their chances are high.
I'm not just saying this because we had the London is Blue pod presenter on Tuesday, but when they played Liverpool at home, remember the 1-1? How good were Chelsea that day?
What a game, yeah.
Exactly.
Terrific game.
They've played some excellent football, but they've had a few results along the way, some bumps in the road, and they've also given up a ton of chances, and I don't know. It's weird.
I think the Sarri-Higuain dynamic is going to be an interesting one, like you said, just because their relationship has been an interesting one. I mean, they almost have like this paternalistic... Like Sarri to Higuain, it's almost like a paternalistic relationship. Yeah. But then after Higuain left to go to Juventus, Sarri talked about how hurt he was that Higuain never even managed to call him to explain, you know, that he was leaving. Because Sarri said the offer Napoli apparently had made Higuain was comparable to what he was going to be getting at Juventus. So the only reason he could have been leaving was it couldn't have been for financial reasons. It had to be for footballing reasons. And I think Sarri was hurt by that. Now, obviously, they've smoothed those things over. And I think Sarri is overjoyed to be bringing Higuain in now.
But he went and won at Juventus, whereas Napoli just were the bridesmaid of Italian football for a few seasons.
But maybe they wouldn't have been. Think of how close that race was.
Maybe.
Maybe they could have used the Higuain. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting, too, to see where Tottenham go from here. Like I said, all of a sudden, things like their match this weekend against Crystal Palace in the FA Cup, all of a sudden that now feels like a cup final. Tottenham cannot go out. They've got to stay in the FA Cup now as long as possible. They have to get a trophy. They just have to. They've got Champions League matches coming up. Players are not going to be ready. Key players, Ali, Kane, they're not going to be ready for that. Certainly the first leg. Man, they're entering, like, it felt like a danger zone after the Arsenal loss, and I gave Tottenham a ton of credit because they rallied, and, you know, they fought their way back into, like, kind of a pseudo title race. They're in that danger zone again now because going out in a semifinal against a rival on penalties is a morale killer, and they are still as wounded injury wise as they were before, so it's not going to get much easier for them.
I wonder, will Daniel take out the checkbook? He's got a week left.
Okay. Don't hold your breath. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very, very quick break. Mailbag on the other side. Some interesting ones. Usually I go into these completely blind. I'm forced,
I like to blindside you the same way you do with...
Feet.
Yeah, you do that to me with trivia.
Yeah, because it's trivia questions. It doesn't... Like, you shouldn't know the question ahead of time. This is mailbag. This is like us actually talking about questions that people have for the podcast. Why would it hurt for me to know that?
By the way, stop being so ratty, okay?
So ratty?
Yeah, you're being ratty. You're one of the rats of Stamford Bridge.
I don't even understand the insult. By the way, ignore it.
You've rolled in no sound for the podcast today.
No, I haven't.
You've been too depressed.
I thought about it and I said, yeah, you know what? No, I don't want to. If JJ has something that he wants played on the show tonight, he'll send me some of his things, but I'm not putting in anything. I don't feel like it.
Okay.
And here we are. Silence. We'll be back right after this. Back now on Caught Offside. JJ, did you see Tim Weah has gotten off to a great start at Celtic?
He certainly has. Two goals in two games. Yeah. He scored against St. Mirren.
They're
fourth
like
goal.
Carbon copies of one another, too.
Slide rule pass, slide rule finish. Very good. Very calm finishes.
I know.
Running across the line.
Yeah.
Now, look, Airdrie are part-time. Okay? That was the cup. And St. Mirren are not very good. But it doesn't matter. That's a really good start. And it's exactly what I predicted. He's going to cause trouble. And Rangers lost. Jermaine Defoe gets his first goal for Rangers, but it doesn't matter because they lose to Kilmarnock, who are the story of the season. It's Celtic and Kilmarnock atop the table.
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. We should also mention, too, before we get to the mailbag in Copa del Rey, Sevilla defeating Barcelona in the first leg 2-0. So Barcelona with a lot of work to do when the second leg goes back to the Nou Camp. And Real Madrid earlier today won 4-2. Oh, you know what? Actually, I meant to say something clever while I...
What clever thing would you like me to say?
You have nothing.
I don't.
In a moment of need, while I tried to look something up. You know what Sergio Ramos did today?
Panenka!
He did the classic Andrew Panenka.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, what about that penalty by Jorginho tonight as well?
Yeah, calm and just... Like,
little hop before he hit it.
Yeah, but one thing... Oh, you know what? There was one other thing from the Tottenham-Chelsea match I wanted to ask you.
Go on, say it.
Do you think... How much was Gazzaniga at fault for the first goal?
Not at fault. It came through so many bodies.
Okay.
I am... You know what my policy is on this. Dyer's got to close Kante down. Don't just stand there and try and get a block. Now, it was a lot of fluke.
Kind of unlucky.
It's gone through three people before it got to Gazzaniga and straight through his legs. I'm not blaming Gazzaniga for that.
All right, but if it was Tim Howard, you'd probably be having a huge laugh right now.
How dare you?
The truth hurts. You have a mailbag here.
At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter. By the way, some people have already done it. Some people still need to. May I direct you towards the Instagram, Caught Offside ESPN.
Oh my God, is this happening?
No, it's up already, but we don't have many followers because I don't do a ton with it. I promise, if we get more followers, we will do more with it.
I've been working very hard maintaining our Friendster account.
And our MySpace account,
where
you publish new music.
I've been very busy maintaining those.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com. That's the other way to get us. Mikey Clemens, or Mikey McClemond, kicks us off. Are Everton the fire festival of clubs? So that is something I can't answer because I have not seen the oft-spoken about documentary.
But you know what the Fire Festival was supposed to be, right? It was like this supposed to be this huge... Like,
island festival.
Yeah,
and it went
a total scam.
Yeah, not just a scam, but...
It was a disaster.
Nothing was the expected things from a large-scale festival were not there, like sanitation and things like that.
Right.
But I haven't seen the documentary on Netflix. I heard it's really good.
I know. There's one on Hulu, too. Isn't it weird how things like that happen? Like, why are there two documentaries about this thing
coming
out simultaneously?
I think the Hulu one takes what you're talking about, the fraudulent element of it.
Okay.
And the Netflix takes the sheer disaster of everything about it. And apparently, in the middle of this all is Ja Rule.
Yeah, he was involved in some way. I love the
By the way, I'm not going to a concert with Ja Rule.
Well, he was one of many.
It's not 1998.
The picture on the when you go on Netflix to watch it,
yeah,
it's just like it's supposed to be a grilled cheese sandwich, I guess, and it's just like two slices of bread with a piece of American cheese just like in the middle. It just looks, everything about it just looks like it was a complete nightmare.
So
no, I don't think Everton, I don't think that's a little harsh on Everton.
The Fire Festival of Clubs is Blackpool, who we spoke about.
All right. I was or like Sunderland right now.
Sunderland, Sunderland, definitely. Michael Brame loved the "and you will know us by the trail of dead" reference, which you were the only one to pick up on it. I said it. I was thinking this had to refer to the band of the same name, of which I am a fan. Is this the case? Love the pod. Take care. It was, and I occasionally enjoy some Texas post-rock. Explosions in the Sky are a band you'd know. They pretty much soundtracked the entire Friday Night Lights TV series.
I'm aware then.
And This Will Destroy Us, or This Will Destroy You, another band that are very good too. Frank Barker, is it possible for Newcastle United to be publicly owned, similar to that of the Green Bay Packers? Could there not be a raising of funds to purchase the team and then turn it to public with stock and have a board that runs it? Is that allowed in the EPL? Are there any other teams that are already publicly owned if it is allowed? There are no EPL teams that are outright supporter-owned or majority supporter-owned. There are teams like Portsmouth who, prior to Michael Eisner buying them out, they were resurrected by the fans. The fans bought them after really terrible ownership. AFC Wimbledon are 77% supporter-owned. Wycombe Wanderers, they're supporter-owned as well. But it's possible. But can you imagine the cost of so many fans getting together to buy out a Premier League club? It's too much money.
It doesn't feel realistic. If you want to talk about like a League Two side or a non-league side,
right.
I feel like we've kind of like crossed the threshold with EPL money now where that just doesn't feel feasible.
The ordinary supporter in the street, how many of them would you need to get together to cover 100, 300 million pounds sterling, which is a low-ball estimate at what a Premier League
club would be. You know what I picture? Like, you know that episode of South Park? When they're trying to like buy the town back from the Native Americans, and they bring all their money to the casino and put it all on red or whatever in roulette. Like, I feel like that's the people of Newcastle, just like everyone coming together. By the way, I just checked my phone because when you said it again, and you will know it's by the Trail of the Dead, I felt like that sounded familiar to me.
Yeah.
And I actually do have one of their songs on my...
Probably Mistakes and Regrets.
No.
Okay.
Do you know this one?
I've seen them live, so I probably should. What's it called?
Will You Smile Again For Me?
I like the sound of it.
You know what? I think it actually, speaking of Newcastle, I think that this song appeared in the movie Goal.
Did it really?
I think so, yeah.
Worlds colliding. It's very, very good.
I know, all colliding at once, unexpectedly.
So they launched a kind of genre of post-rock that many bands have followed on from, where... there are little lyrics or none.
There's almost no lyrics in this entire song.
Yeah, it's all instrumental. It doesn't make it any less cool. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Loving that.
Nice.
Probably breaking copyright.
No, we're fine. What else you got?
Benjamin Sweeney, on a similar theme, has told us that he loves the pod and he has bought shares in Chattanooga FC. Should we expect to see other lower tier teams in the US follow suit in that they will offer public ownership? Lower tier teams, yes. MLS teams, teams like that, no. Not going to happen.
Wait, he said he's a partial...
Yeah, he's a proud owner of part of Chattanooga FC.
Wow.
Yeah. I would say in the lower tiers, especially the way they've re-tiered USL, USL Championship, USL 1, you could do that. It's possible. And it's probably a good model. It's the perfect model, actually, but like I said, the Premier League has gone to a level where it's, and probably MLS, where it's impossible to do it for fans.
I would say definitely MLS. If that wasn't the case, I feel like the people of Columbus would have would have gone to those measures.
Sure, but don't forget, MLS franchises, when they were bought and sold at the start, were quite cheap. Mm. Kyle Newman, a little stay woke thought for you guys. All right. The way Tim worded his tweet, Tim Howard that is, was that this MLS season would be his last. He's part of the ownership group of the new USL team in Memphis, Memphis 901 FC. Many people here hope he will play for them after MLS, so not retiring fully from the soccer landscape. P.S. Give us some caught offside merch to spend money on. Howard is also part of a consortium that has taken over Dagenham and Redbridge in the Conference Premier in England, so maybe he's going to play for them. That would put bums on seats.
But the line in his tweet, though, where he said there will be time for sentiment later. Like, to me, you don't include a line like that unless you know you're not going to be playing. Like, this is everyone's last chance to watch you play.
Yeah.
Unless he means that the time for sentiment will, like, really be later, after I finish playing for Memphis.
Yeah, much later.
Right.
Give us some caught offside merch to spend money on.
You know
I am going to get on that.
I'm not trying to be, like, make us... Like, I'm not trying to sound arrogant or anything here, but he is far from the first person to say that to us.
We need to do that. Give us, again, I'll canvas opinion. What kind of stuff would you like? T-shirts? Beanie hats? You know?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of something different.
Yeah, that we could do.
Yeah, what could we really, like, bilk people
at? A little keychain that when you press it, it's Andrew's voice in. How dare you? God hates me. I thought this would be our year. Things like that. Sam King in Waterloo, Ontario. I have been listening to the pod for about a year now, but this is my first time writing in. You guys do a fantastic job covering soccer, and I love listening to the pod on my way to school or work. As JJ may know, I actually didn't know this, Sligo Rovers kicked off their preseason, I knew that much, with an 11-0 win. That was on Tuesday. My friend and fellow Canadian, Chris Twardek, opened the scoring for the Bit of Red and later added two more for the hat-trick. His friend.
That's awesome.
I was hoping you could give him a shout on the pod and wish him and Sligo luck on their upcoming season. Absolutely. Sam goes on to say he is excited about Canada's chances of qualifying for World Cup 2022 with the relative explosion of youth players like Alphonso Davies.
And Chris Twardek, apparently.
Well, yeah. What do we think about this? I went back...
Sligo winning 11-0?
No, about Canada and their chances in the next World Cup qualification. I would say this. First of all, you got to get to the hex. And that was failure number one. Now, you were unlucky. You were in with Honduras and Mexico in your mini-draw before the hex. What's that called before that? Before the hex, what's that?
Oh, man.
The quadrangular.
I don't know.
The Rubik's Cube. Whatever. And you need to score some goals. And I wouldn't put all the pressure on Alphonso Davies because his job is to make sure he's starting regularly for his team in Germany.
Well, I mean, what do you think of a... I'm trying to think of how old would Kyle Larin be?
Kyle Larin will only be 25.
He's 23 now.
Right. I mean, is he regularly playing in Turkey? Kind of.
How old is Paul Stalteri?
Stop now. Come on.
No, I'm trying to help.
Paul Pescasolido. No, but he mentioned, like, we'll say, like, they've got older players as well that they can add into the mix. They should have enough on paper, but I don't know. I would have thought that last time around, too.
It's always been difficult for them.
Really? It has for the last 30 years, since 86.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. Gred, we really didn't help there, did we?
What are we going to say?
We don't know.
Who knows? That's in three and a half years.
The thing is, I'll just say this, and I've learned this from my CONCACAF journey. You rate these teams, like Canada and the US even, so highly because there is a knowledge bias. You know of their players.
But honestly...
And then you go out and you see Honduras in Honduras, in San Pedro Sula, and you're like, ooh.
But like, we of all the things that we know on this podcast, you know, we're frauds about 99% of the time. But I actually...
No, we're not.
Absolutely, we are.
No, we're not.
Fraud.
If there's something we don't know about, in fairness to us, we say, I don't know.
But the one,
or we look it up.
But the one thing that I feel like I do...
Don't call
like,
me a fraud again.
You're
I'm
one
dead
of the biggest
serious.
That I
That's
know.
That's a line in the sand for me.
One of the biggest that
Cross
I've ever known.
It, and I swear to God, you'll have more to cry about than just Spurs. Go on.
But I actually believe that, like, U.S. soccer is a thing that we know, like, the back of our hands.
Okay.
And even if he asked that question, not about Canada, but said, what do you think of the U.S.'s chances at a World Cup in 2022? I don't even know how I'd answer that.
No, it's
with
fair.
With all the things that are going to change in between now and then. So don't make it sound like we were bereft in it, not answering that question.
No, you're right. And by the way, we are the people that took to the airways after we lost 2-0 away at Guatemala to say everything will be okay. Everything was not okay.
But it felt like it would be.
Greg Posnick, it has been brutally cold in the Midwest this last weekend. I remember JJ mentioned the Sunderland documentary on Netflix, so I gave it a try. I still have 3 episodes left. It was all very interesting, but one thing that stuck out was how bad the game footage made all the Sunderland goalkeepers look. My wife, who is not a fan of any sports, walked through the room and proclaimed the goalies to be horrendous. Do you think they were that bad, or is a matter of editing and angles of the footage? Don't forget, this was about Sunderland's fall from grace, so it's going to show all the Sunderland goals they conceded. That has a skewing bias on the whole thing. But can I say this? Having a bad defence like Sunderland had in front of you will make any goalkeeper look bad. They went through, I think, 3 goalkeepers in their route to League One. And they were bad. Yes, they were bad.
Yeah.
This is very cool. So this is from Anne, who regularly emails. So I just got back from a 3-week trip to Bali, feeling adventurous. I hired a guide to pick me up at 1 a.m. and help me hike 7 miles in the pitch black up to the top of a volcano. Knowing I'd need extra strength, I wore my Spurs kit beneath about 3 other layers. So since nobody else in my life really knew what my kit was, I thought I'd send it to you boys. Excuse the lack of smile. At the time these were taken, I'd already been awake 6 hours and still had to figure out how the hell to get down from the top of an active, streaming volcano. I may or may not be playing up top against Chelsea this week, as Llorente is just an assault on everything. And Anne sent us the picture. You saw the picture, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. She's looking quite... how would you say it? Brazen-faced.
Yeah, the lack of smile seems oddly fitting.
But she's, I mean, it's a beautiful view behind her, and she is repping the Spurs shirt.
What an amazing thing to have done. What's
yeah.
the most adventurous thing you've ever done?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot there.
I know. I'm trying to think for myself, too. I've never skydived. I've never bungee jumped.
No, I wouldn't do anything like that. No, because I'm...
I went parasailing once. Is that in any way adventurous?
That is. That's
all right. I mean, I've hiked, like, significant hikes.
I mean, I've climbed mountains back home in Ireland, but I never thought them as adventurous.
I did a donkey ride on in Bryce Canyon, along the cliffs of Bryce Canyon.
That's pretty cool. That's adventurous.
Yeah. I like, I'm very outdoorsy. I love being one with nature.
Yeah, right.
I'm serious.
Yeah, okay.
JJ, I'm going on these bear hunts through Westchester County.
Not actually. You weren't going to kill bears.
No. I'm just looking for
them. Right, okay, I got you.
I would see a note in the Daily Voice that says there was a bear sighting here, and bang, I got right in the car. Still searching, though. But I love that stuff.
I went Amish hunting.
Hopefully that is also not...
No. Because I was in that part of Pennsylvania.
Lancaster.
And I wanted to discover more about them. So I drove right into a farm during the 5 o'clock period when they were milking cows. And I spoke to a guy who was like, what are you doing on my property?
You just drove up?
Drove up the drive, yeah.
Who do you think you are?
And there was these little kids in these 16th century outfits, tiny little kids, 4 or 5 years old, helping to bring in the cattle for milking. Massive cows who could have easily crushed these kids. The father was such a nice guy. Wonderful people.
It's like you get in a time machine.
Yeah.
Because Lancaster isn't too far from where I grew up. It's probably about an hour and a half or so. So lots of field trips growing up.
It's gorgeous.
In elementary school and
rolling
things like that.
Hills.
Yeah, but when you're a young kid, I think now you and I are old enough to appreciate what an interesting culture that is.
It is.
When you're in fourth grade, you're just this is arguably the most bored I've ever been in my entire life.
Right.
I'd rank it my fourth grade trip to Amish country right up there with when my parents took me to see The Secret Garden. Those, I can't decide which one was more boring for me.
I really enjoyed Amish country. I thought it was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Is that it?
Adventurous. You put me on the spot there. I'm going to have to think about this and come back.
Okay.
I was going to say I discovered Portugal. When I think of adventure, I think sailing.
Maybe Magellan.
Yeah.
At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter or caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Quick what to watch for, because this weekend we go from this to this. It's an FA Cup weekend. Friday it actually kicks off with a really good one, JJ, at 2:55. Arsenal and Manchester United.
My buddy Liam, who you've met, is going to the game.
Oh, wow.
His company.
At the Emirates, huh?
His company is called Highbury Concrete.
Okay.
And our Highbury Construction. Sorry, Construction. Should get that right. And the owners of his company are Arsenal fans. He's a Man United fan. But they own a box at Highbury. At the Emirates.
The Emirates.
Yeah.
Wow. That is really, really...
That is very cool.
It's very cool. This game comes at a really interesting time for both of these clubs because United are in the midst of this resurgence under Solskjaer and Arsenal are kind of in a period right now of real uncertainty for how the season has gone. And
although the win appears to have put a bit more wind in their sails.
That's true, the 2-0 over Chelsea. So it feels like this now, do Arsenal kind of continue off of that and now keep themselves alive in this tournament, or do Manchester United continue to ride the Solskjaer wave? One of these clubs is going to come out of this. This might be United's best shot at a trophy. And the same I would probably say of Arsenal, although they might think that the Europa League is well within their chances as well.
Yeah, maybe.
So this is like an early stage in the tournament for these two teams to be meeting.
It's also a classic matchup. They met in a final in the 70s, which went to extra time. It was wonderful. And let's not forget the Ryan Giggs semi-final. Yeah. So there's a lot of history in this one.
Saturday, 12:30. Oh.
Millwall.
Against Everton.
Millwall.
At the Den.
Oh, wow. Everton go to the Den.
Yeah.
The most unique of atmospheres.
Never been, but I'll take your word for it.
By the way, they've secured ownership of their home. Remember Lewisham, I think it was Lewisham County Council, were going to take it, basically, and build houses on it.
Saturday, 2:45, AFC Wimbledon and West Ham.
Supporter-owned AFC Wimbledon.
There you go. Against West Ham, hosting West Ham. As far as I know, Marko Arnautović is still a member of the Hammers. Whether or not he plays in that match, I don't know.
Well, apparently Pellegrini said today, he's been working fine with us. He's been training, being a professional.
Right.
And he may play some part.
But people don't always act that way when they're in the midst of trying to force their way out of a club. You do see that.
Yeah. I don't know. He should be doing these things. These are the things he should absolutely be doing, and I am loath to give him praise.
That's fair. And then Sunday, 1 o'clock, Chelsea and Sheffield Wednesday at the Bridge.
Sheffield Wednesday are one of those teams, Andrew, where you're like, you should be in the Premier League. Massive ground, great supporter base. Used to be a top flight team. It's weird.
When was their last year in the top flight?
Got to be 99, 2000, I think.
Wow. Oh.
Or was it 2000, 2001? In around that direction. Yep.
Coming on 20 years. Let's see. Oh, it's the MLS portion of the show, JJ.
Red card.
Let me go first. I know how excited everyone has been. My red card goes to Toronto FC. JJ, Gregory Vanderveel is out at Toronto FC after a training camp blow-up with manager Greg Vanney.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Vanderveel posted this on Instagram. Dear Toronto, I called you home and I was so happy that I had finally found a place that felt like that. Year one had ups and downs, but I found my joy back and I could not wait to get started this new season. I was ready to give it all. Unfortunately, year two will never come due to differences with the coaching staff. I just want to win and do that no matter what the consequences are. I guess that mentality was a little too much for them, and they decided they do not need me for this season. Teammates and fans, I will miss you guys. I'm sure there are two sides to every story. I would kind of like to hear Greg Vanney's.
I would very much like to hear that.
This is a guy who started at right back for the Netherlands when they finished runner-up in the World Cup against Spain. Now, he's kind of had a bit of a European odyssey since then, and last year he was in MLS with Toronto.
This is week one of preseason.
That's the thing. Like, if you're Toronto and you're coming off of what was such a disappointing season a year ago, like, you don't need to start the follow-up season on a negative note. Like, now, maybe, like, I don't know how he's perceived through the club. Maybe there's guys in the club who are like, oh, thank God he's gone.
Maybe he's one of those guys, he's a dressing room poison.
I don't know. But if he's not, like, if he is just one of the guys and for whatever reason Vanney and him just couldn't get along and now he's out, well, then it's terrible for them, I would think. So this I just thought was such an interesting and negative way for Toronto to begin a season where they are looking to bounce back from what was really a historically disappointing season. So that is my red card.
I'll give you a chance to tee up the music. Andrew, who would have thought that spending 4 years doing analysis in the Sky Sports studio for a lot of money and being an assistant manager for an international team wouldn't prepare you thoroughly for life at the razor's edge of top club level management? It's time for Thierry Henry watch.
Henry!
Thierry Henry watch.
What a goal!
Ba-ba-boom!
What's the French for ba-ba-boom?
What is French for ba-ba-boom?
As we predicted, it wouldn't last long, this segment.
I know.
We'll have to revive it wherever else he goes.
Yeah.
And Jay Wolf, who is a producer at Always Late with Katie Nolan, suggested that we may be reviving it for his job as David Beckham's manager at Inter Miami. Mm. You could see that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Monaco have sacked manager Thierry Henry after 20 games in charge. The league on strugglers, that doesn't cut it.
They're
second from bottom. On Thursday, they announced he had been suspended, but BBC Sport understands that is merely procedural and that the France World Cup winner has already left the club. I watched highlights of the 5-1 battering at home by Strasbourg. Now, they lost. They had a player sent off early, Andrew, but they were... Let me set the scene. First of all, there are no fans in Monaco. That stadium is routinely empty.
Yeah.
It is cavernously, weirdly funereal. And they come out onto the field and you wonder what Fabregas was thinking. And the centre midfield partnership of Fabregas and Tielemans was like soft cheese. Ripped apart routinely. Some of the goals that Strasbourg scored were very good, but at the same time, it was also easy. And why did they not just sack him then? No, I know he's a club legend there, but just sack him.
Monaco really did this gracefully, huh? the suspension before the firing, like
put him into purgatory as you suggested this morning.
Oh, this whole thing just went so south on them. I can't believe Monaco are going to get relegated from where they were even a year, two years ago. Really,
well, that's why they're firing him now, to try and salvage something. Now I looked at. The team is okay. It
shouldn't be this bad.
It shouldn't be this bad. Because if you look at it, teams on with much smaller budgets. I know they've lost a lot of players over the last few years, but Lille are second. Lille do not have the budget that Monaco do.
Unbelievable. So there you go.
So that's it. The end of Thierry Henry watch.
Well, it was fun. It was certainly fun.
Do you want to play it one more time?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, we should really have some sort of like Sarah McLachlan.
Henri.
Thierry Henry watch.
What a goal!
Ba-ba-boom. Was the French for ba-ba-boom.
Sad. Very sad. Oh, boy.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
Let's see, JJ. Toronto was my red card. Atlanta United FC are my man of the match, really my team of the match.
And I know why.
Wow. What a signing that they just made. The highest transfer fee in MLS history, $14 million. They've locked in Gonzalo Pitti Martinez from River Plate. Atlanta have, by the way, three of the top five most expensive transfers in MLS history are Atlanta ones, with Martinez now, Ezequiel Barco, and Miguel Almiron. Martinez, 25-year-old attacking midfielder, helped lead River to a Copa Libertadores title over their rival Boca Juniors, and was named as the 2018 South American Player of the Year. This from Atlanta United FC's technical director, Carlos Bocanegra. He says, recently named as the best player in South America in 2018, Gonzalo is an attacking player who can play wide or centrally. His abilities complement our style of play, and we expect him to make a smooth transition to MLS. Yeah, I would expect that too. They've re-signed Joseph Martinez. They still have Miguel Almiron. They have a really high-end young talent with Franco Escobar, Ezequiel Barco, Julian Gressel. Still have Darlington Nagbe. JJ, Atlanta is like set up and primed to just like dominate.
Stockpiling.
Yeah. But even beyond Atlanta, when looking at this signing, this is really good for MLS. 25-year-old South American Player of the Year. When guys like that, of that age, of that caliber, are making a move, it's not typically to the United States. It's typically to Europe.
I think Martinez staying...
Yes.
Was crucial in that. Now, I argued that the best move for him at 25 was to stay. Stay in MLS, break that goals record, become a legend, and you're playing in front of 70,000 people anyway. You are not going to Real Madrid or Barcelona. Anything else is a, let's just say, more tricky to negotiate path. And staying was the right move. But it definitely had a knock-on effect in that players like Pitti Martinez and, you know, what if Almiron stays? Now, I don't know how that will affect their budget, but if Almiron does stay...
Well, they're going to have to do some kind of rejiggering, because right now they have four designated players. So something is going to have to give.
Tottenham linked with £23 million rated Newcastle target Miguel Almiron, according to TalkSport today.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Because, basically, Mike Ashley won't pony up the money.
No. What do you have?
Woman of the match. Imke Wubbenhorst is the first woman to coach in Germany's top five leagues at fifth-tier BV Kloppenburg. That nice. Struck me last week when I saw it. I thought that was awesome. However, like any woman in any sphere that has been male-dominated for so long, some of the questions she gets are, how shall I put it, just stupid. A journalist from German newspaper Welt made the mistake of asking the 30-year-old if her players are forced to cover up when she enters the dressing room. She sarcastically replied by saying, "Of course not. I'm a professional. I pick the team on penis size."
Well,
that
played.
Is the only answer to such a question.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Well, good for her.
By the way, that is that's no joke.
That's honestly, it's great.
That's really amazing.
Yeah,
I think we're probably going to see more of that, especially as it's slowly beginning to happen in the NBA and the NFL, where assistants and there's certainly a female assistant coach in the NBA.
I feel like it. You really should see it here. I would think there. You know, with the regard in which women's soccer is held in the U.S. and with such like brilliant minds that
the knowledge
play
base
the sport,
we have,
like you would certainly think that could easily happen in the U.S.
Like if Carly Lloyd, if and when she retires, got her coaching badges and starts off like at a USL club, like,
yeah,
would that be a weird signing at all?
I could easily see that.
If she wants to go down that road, I'm just saying.
All right, but look like, at the cumulative. Change her name out with any other number of like, you know, some of these brilliant soccer players that have come through the women's system in the U.S.
Seriously?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Very cool story there. Hey, we got through this.
I enjoyed it.
I think I held it together beautifully.
I think it was lucky that we had other things to talk about.
Well, there's always a lot of things to talk
about. I know, but we needed to get off the Spurs subject. I could see your bottom lip was quivering.
What are you wearing, by the way? The people should know. JJ has on a what some people would refer to it as a kit. I would refer to it as kind of a billboard wrapped around your body.
It's from La Paz in Bolivia, a club called The Strongest. And my buddy got it for me when he visited there in November. And it's, I suppose, in lieu of not having a lot of money from TV contracts, they've decided to plaster their Hull City jersey. And it is very Hull City.
Yeah, yeah.
With
every advertisement, like picture the first scene from, what was it, Major League 2?
Yeah.
When Dorn is trying to make money for the Indians and like the outfield wall is just one, they call it the yellow pages basically. Yeah, that's what you're wearing right now.
It's got three sponsors on one shoulder,
yeah.
Three sponsors on the other. I think I counted earlier today before I put it on, 14 sponsors in all.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So I'm repping the Bolivian community. So there we are.
And you tell me that American sports are too commercialized. Okay.
That's not the same thing.
Hey, this was fun, my friend. Everybody enjoy this weekend. To you, I say...
Take it later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Cheer up.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.